Jean, nu na kun ta pe itu min jo mongwa tha so ni cha halu wa itu registered behavior technician la huwa RBT la gu tau tia ta ka ka tu ta mo autism diagnosis ta ka tu min jo le ke le jo nu yo recommend speech therapy occupational therapy physical therapy tia ABA therapy yo applied behavior analysis to sit ta ka mo ABA therapy ke Kayon jin ta ka tu BCBA la tu hua board certified behavior analyst ni yon jwa ka tu mi yo shin ni ken bo ri ka ni ha yon ni pa ka tin ji thia ha ya ka won ye the ji ka ha sa ka pe pa ka tu mi yo chen je ka tin ji thia la ka chi nong ta Kei tō kānin jua ka tu miño hai tia ni mō pēng sīngbō li tia ni mā create hall treatment plan tia kia ko hai tia ni kā recommendation tō ka tu miño tō therapy yō tē zhōng tē gō tō bō chō sā mō tō iwi tō kā jā ka tu miño tō ABA ka mā rin jī ka tu RBT tō nā yī tō therapist ka yōng jī every day tō kā drop me off tia sā kā mō tā nī Là yêu cái cơ hội để nó nói mình cần mình cần cần bởi nó or nó nói như mình ba cỡ tình nhà làm gì thế cô cho đi sợ đấy lắm lắm cô thế từ điện thoại Linda và ít thả chân đi chơi hơn rồi ở ít thu RBT đó cho mình nhỏ mà chứ sao
Hello? On today's episode, I'm going to be doing a career profile for professionals who serve the autism community. And to start us off with this, I have as my guest today Linda Manglore. She is an RBT, which is a registered behavior technician that I ran into in one of the groups that I co-founded. And Linda just brings so much passion and insight to the field. And I was interested in kind of learning also how she got here, what things she has learned. And also, we were just talking about where she's planning to go from here. So, welcome to the podcast, Linda.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Of course. When I met you, I think it was kind of like the your passion and your excitement about RBT and really also about bringing ABA or just more awareness of autism to the Hmong community that I was like, oh, I want to talk to her. So thank you so much for making time for me today.
No, thank you for asking and making time for me. Because I know you're a busy person yourself. You're running so many things. You're a BCBA and work and everything.
And really, this whole podcast came about because I was in a hybrid role, and that meant like I was home for 3 weeks and then I was on site for a week. And I was like, so I was like, I gotta do something, So I just started the podcast, which is something that I've been wanting to do for a long time, but it was just like right time. So I'm gonna go ahead and just start with the questions and we'll go from there. Okay. So Linda, tell me, what is your current role in your clinic and how many years have you been working in the field of ABA?
So, like you said, I am an RBT, a registered behavior technician. I've been doing this field work for 2 years now, just hit my 2 year mark back in July. So it's been a 2 years and a few months, but I feel like I've been doing this forever. So, I mean, I really enjoy it. So.
Yeah, and so for those of you that don't are not familiar with the title, so an RBT is like your entry level position, so you only need like a high school degree to fulfill that role, and also you would have to do like a 40-hour module and pass a certification with the BACB. So it's a really great stepping stone, right, to become either a BCABA or a BCBA. And Linda, maybe thinking about that. We'll talk more about that later. And do you mind to tell me where you're located, Linda?
Oh, yes, yeah, sorry. I am actually in Charlotte, North Carolina, but our yeah, so we have the Charlotte region and the Hickory region with the company that I'm with. So, yeah.
20 years ago, it was a long time ago, probably 30 years ago, I was living in North Carolina, and I see all of the job postings now for like BCBAs or BCBA related in North Carolina. I'm like, wow, it is booming. And I'm wondering, like, do I want to move back there? You know, like these jobs are not available like 20 years ago, even 10 years ago. So it's really great to see that there's like so many more opportunities.
Yeah, and so many different companies too, because even with my company, like when I was searching the job back then, I was like, okay, there's like ABS Kids or ABA Kids, and then there's ALP, which is what I work in. But now there's like multiple different ones around. I'm just like, dang, there's so many like different companies now too for ABA.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And like I said, it's good for the professionals and also good for the kiddos, right? Because, I mean, we just wait lists are so heartbreaking when you hear about wait lists for years, right? And the parents like, oh, we're number 50-something. You're going, oh, my gosh. We have kids in service for like 3-4 years tops. How are they ever going to get in? So the more agencies, the better. And, you know, that sometimes leads to people saying, oh, well, there's a lot of competition. And I'm like, no, this is not competition. We are here to help. So don't ever feel like, you know, if you open up a company, you're my competitor. No, we're not. We're all here to help get these people off the wait list. You know? That's really great to hear. So Linda, what brought you to this field working with individuals living with autism?
So I've always known that I wanted to work with kids because I love kids growing up. I'm the oldest girl in the family, so I've always babysat like everybody's kid. I'm always the babysitter. Yeah. So I always loved working with kids, and I knew I wanted to work with kids. But then I didn't really know, like, I didn't want to become a teacher either. So I was like, I don't know, like, seems like teacher's the only job that you could work with kids in, you know, growing up. That's what I thought.
Right.
But then I actually have a sister that was born with Down syndrome. So growing up, like we were still young, like my parents obviously being Hmong, like they didn't know that the services that were given to them was going to help her. And, you know, like Hmong parents, when they are told that their child has Down syndrome or has like a certain disability or is going to be born like that, then like they're in denial until they're born, right?
Right.
But then I realized that my mom then didn't give her services that she need. So growing up, like taking care of her, like there was challenges, you know, obviously, because we were also like not educated. So then I was like, okay, now that I have my bachelor's, maybe I should look into all this like childcare and like working with family who has kids on the spectrum. So then you can also be an advocate for the kids, also for the parents, you know? And then, like you said, I wanted to, like, it's still like a stigma in like, I mean, not just the Hmong community, but like society overall, you know? So I was like, I think it needs to be more like known in the Hmong community, especially parents like our parents that are older generation, but still even new parents, it's still something that like they don't still understand themselves. So yeah, it's because of my sister.
And so if you don't mind me asking a little bit more about your sister, as we know, like with Down syndrome, right? Like if you are diagnosed with Down syndrome, there are physical markers, right? With autism, it's a little bit harder, right? And so for our parents or any parents, or and especially our Hmong parents too, and like you said, the older generation, when it's not so apparent, when it's not the physical markers are not there, it's harder to understand, right? Like, but they look quote unquote normal, right? And so and it's, how do you bypass that, you know, having those conversations? So yeah, well, Linda, I'm really glad that it brought you to this field to hopefully, you know, take some of that those tools back to help your sister, your family.
Yes.
So that's great. And thank you too, you know, for kind of being part of this conversation. And that's kind of why I started the podcast, you know. It's great what we do with the group, but I feel like I need a central place where people can go and listen to the stories, right? And hear conversations. And a big part of what I want to do is normalizing these conversations. Let's talk about them. It's okay to talk about them. don't be scared, don't be shy, don't feel like nobody will understand, you know, mm-hmm. or nobody will listen. And so thank you so much for being part of that conversation with me.
Oh, thank you.
As an RBT, what is the best part of your workday?
One of the best parts of my day would be like just spending time with my clients and like knowing that you're making a difference in their life, even though yeah. you don't feel like you are, but mm-hmm. you really are. You truly are when you're showing up every single day to these, you know, sessions. Mm-hmm. Not just that, but you're making a difference, not for them, but their parents and their siblings as well, because their parents are really appreciative. But then again, it depends on the client and the family as well. But luckily I've worked with like great families and like great clients. So I enjoy my everyday with them. I even told my client's parents the other day, what did they say? They said something about how, because it was his little brother's birthday and we had went to the trampoline park, and I was like, oh, like, thank you for letting me go with you guys, and I really appreciate it and stuff. And they're like, no, we appreciate you, you know, like, thank you for taking the time to go with us. But then I told them, I was like, I enjoy my time with you guys. Rather we go out in the community and do something fun, or even just doing session at home. Like, I enjoy my time with you guys. They're like, oh, we love you. We love like the time we spend with you too. And I was like, oh, like that just, it's just seeing like the progress that your client makes as well is what makes your day, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. If you were to think about your daily life as an RBT, what would you say is like a not so great part of your workday? If there are even any?
I think I would say a not so great part of my day, I would say, is when, like, you know, how every day with a client on the spectrum or with autism is never the same every day. It's uh-huh. always, and that's why I also love this job, because every day is different with your clients. Mm-hmm. Like, even though there's a routine, blah, blah, but every day is just a different day for them. So, mm-hmm. like, I think a not so great day would be, like, when my client, he's not very, like, engaging. Because then I feel like, okay, maybe I'm doing something wrong. Mm-hmm. Or maybe, like, he's mad at me or something. Or, okay. like, maybe he's just, like, having, like, a, I don't feel like doing anything day. So right. I do work with the kid that's nonverbal. And I work with the younger children's, not like the older ones. Like, we have older kids too, like okay. School age kids too, but the age that I'm working with right now is like the younger ones, so the ones that's under 6 years old.
Okay.
Yeah
and every age group, you know, like some people are like, I want to work with the little babies, right? Like the, mm-hmm. the early intervention kids, because they're kids and it's fun. And some people are like, I want to work with teenagers, you know. And I've been fortunate mm-hmm. to work with all of them. And so there's like pros and cons, right? Because then the little ones, you're like, well, yeah. we can't play board games with them, you know. But then the teenagers, yeah. you can do stuff like, you know, go do outings and have you know, like really interesting conversations and find out like where are they at. So tell me, what is the most rewarding part of working with individuals living with autism?
I think the most rewarding part is when you see the progress that they make, mm-hmm. like from the very beginning. Yeah. Like, it's not going to be like an overnight progress, but like, especially when like new goals are introduced and then they like master it, or they make progress and you think that they're not going to do it, or they're not going to be able to catch yeah. on for like a little while. But, you know, client surprises you all the time. Like an example, one of my clients right now, we're like potty training him.
Mm, so oh gosh, yes.
So the BCBA's goal is to hopefully like at least have him potty trained by the end of the year.
Okay.
Because he's turning 5 soon. Yeah. So then so at the beginning it was like, you know, getting the whole like toileting routine, having him go to the bathroom and like doing all that. And at first it was like he didn't want to go. You know, obviously he doesn't want to go to the bathroom.
Sure, so yeah.
then like just having him willingly, voluntarily, like when you tell him or when the timer goes off and be like, hey, it's time to go potty. He's like, like he's just going to the potty and doing everything by himself. And I'm just like, yay, like you're doing it. And so now we're at the point where like he's at least voiding in the toilet once a day. So like once a day when I'm there, and I'm just like, did you just pee in the potty like by yourself?
Yes. I know. And, you know, I think a lot of people, you know, maybe parents or family members of individuals, if they do have never met, right, an individual with autism and understood the struggles that it goes through to do toilet training, and when we describe it, they're like, oh, hi, Gina. What does that mean? Like, what do you mean, Gina? It's like, because it's so easy, right, for them to have autism. I mean, I think toilet training, any human being is difficult.
Yeah.
But like you said, like, you know, when you teach it and in ADA, we break it down, right? Like the first thing we do is just go, just literally walking, going to the bathroom. That's a goal, right? That, like you're taking that out, whether or not they're going independently. Yeah. And then like everything else we can prompt through. That's fine. And then once they get that, then we'll work on, okay, once he's in there, dance out, you know what I mean? And it's just like so broken down and we're targeting everything at a time. And it does take a while because, like you said, you know, you guys' goal is, you know, the end of the year. That's 4 more months, right? And so, like, a lot of parents don't have that kind of patience for, like, you know, 4 more months. And also, every kiddo is individualized, too, right? We might have the same protocol, but, like, one kiddo gets it just like that, and one kiddo can take 4 months, right? So I think I always find that as part of the challenge. And part of, for me, I'm such a competitive person. I'm like, challenge accepted. Let's do this, you know?
Right.
Like, hard, right. So let's do this. We're gonna do this every day. And sometimes I would have RBT, I'd be like, oh no, we're potty training. That's me. I'm just sitting in the bathroom all day, you know?
Yeah, no, and I don't feel like that because like I'm just like, well, I'm like you, we're gonna get this. Nope. You're gonna get this before the end of the year. You're gonna do this before like you turn 5. And his parents are like, Linda, you're being too hopeful. And I was like, no, like I know he can do it. Yeah. And like his parents' goal for him is like at least by next year that he's potty trained by himself, right? So I'm just like, nope, he's gonna get it. We're gonna do it. We're gonna do it.
Yeah, no, I love that, Linda. And for me, I always share this story of how I had a kiddo who he had a dual diagnosis of autism and CP. And so then with CP, that's a lot of the physical things, right, that he could not do because his body was just not regulated enough to do it. And one of those things, the goal that his parents were kind of like, those parents were like, they were probably like, realistic about it, they were like, I don't know, I just don't know if he's ever gonna, you know, sip out of a straw, and we're really concerned because we don't want him to choke, but we also don't know. And I was like, no, I got it, we're gonna do this, we're gonna work on it every single day. So we went in there and you know, worked on straw, and it was messy, and it was a lot of sweat and tears and blood to be like, oh, we're gonna get this. And we did, right, within like weeks, if not months. And it was so, for me, it was so exhilarating when the parents were like, we just never thought he'd learn how to do that. I'm like, no, we got it. You know, so it's a great feeling, you know. So I miss that, Linda. I miss being a line staff and being like right there every day, you know. And so then if people know that you're in the field of ABA, do they ever ask you for your opinion on whether or not you think their child has autism? You know what I mean? Like, give up on the, Linda, oh, Linda, me, you have more autism. Do they ask you sometimes or friends, or maybe other people? Because again, you know, like in the Hmong community, we don't even talk about autism, right? Like,
so when there is, like, if I know of a person that has a kid with autism, or like, you know, like a mental health or a development delay, I would actually, I like, it's always so like, boom, like the right timing too, because then they conversate with somebody about it, about their concerns with their kids. Right. And I'll be like, hey, you know, like I work an ABA, and I don't know if you guys know what that is, but then I go on and tell them about like my field of work. So then they will ask me questions about it, but like I've learned, obviously I'm not just going to give them like my opinion, because then I'll be like, I really don't know. So I'll be like, you know, this is my company, you can reach out to them and they can answer these questions for you, you know. But when it comes to like family and like, and they know that I do work in the field, they would ask me and they would be like, hey, what do you think of, what do you think my child has this, this, this? And I'll be like, I'm going to be honest, I don't know, because I'm not like licensed to, you know, figure out what is wrong with your child. And it's so funny because it's just not family. It's like when I work with a kid and they're like in a daycare or they're in a school setting, the teachers or the directors will come up to me and be like, hey, we have a kid that's like this. Like, do you think he has this? And do you think he needs this? And I'll be like, I'm going to be honest, I don't know. Like, I'm not licensed or professional to like evaluate this child for you guys, but I have resources that I can give you to reach out to those professionals, you know. But then I do, like when it does come to like interfamily or intermediate family, and I know, I'll be like, you know, it doesn't hurt to go get an eval with the pediatrician. So I would say go ahead and, you know, talk to your pediatrician about it and tell them your concerns. And they can go from there and they can help you find your specialist that you need.
Perfect answer. Look at you.
Yeah.
If you were to share a message with any Hmong parents, and so having been in a field and having a sister with Down syndrome and kind of living that experience of, you know, seeking services or even knowing what services are available to seek, right? Because that's part of the challenge, is knowing that what is available. Well, what do we need? Who can fulfill it? And not really not realizing that almost everything that you might need, there is some kind of funder out there that can provide it. You don't have it out of your pocket. But how would you know that if nobody told you, right?
Right.
So what is a message that you share with Hmong parents whose child is diagnosed with autism or any other developmental disability?
I honestly thought about this question really hard.
Yeah.
Because you know, I think you mentioned it before in some of your lives that we were doing, like, there's not a specific word that we can really say in Hmong or translate autism into Hmong. So it's very hard to, like, watch what you say and, like, to not offend them, you know. But I think one message would be, like, and obviously having a sister and growing up with, like, all the resources that were given to my sister and my parents just denied it all. Like, take advantage of your resources. Take advantage of the resources, and you just got to think that it's not for you. It's mainly for your child, but it's also actually is for you too, because you're also going to learn through the process of these services how to communicate with your child and, like, how to help them with certain things and knowing how to help your child to, you know, reach the potential. So if you're using all these resources that are given to you, just take advantage of it. And it doesn't hurt to ask questions along the way as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think as a people, we don't want to feel like we are bothering somebody else by asking for something, you know. We'd rather just be like, oh, I don't want to bother anybody. So, you know, put yourself at all, right? And also feeling like, don't want to feel entitled to stuff, but it's like, no, you absolutely should ask. I think there are a lot of parents who don't know that they can get like pull-ups for their kids for as long as they need it for free, you know? And then they're going, oh, well, we are struggling financially because we have been using our budget for this thing. We didn't know that they could have been provided all these years. And so you go, well, we can't go back and retroactively do anything about that, but let's educate others along the way. And then also, and a message that I really try to share in our group too is like, anything you want, anything, like you want chewies, somebody can pay for that. You don't have to pay for that out of your pocket. Don't buy from Amazon, you know. Get like medical grade, you know, chewies. in the pull-ups, and then we talk about, like, you know, harnesses for cars. You know, I put a lot of information out there about angel scent because people don't realize if your child eloped from you, in which elopes mean like here from you, right? And that could be, that's a safety issue. You can't just always chase after your child. At some point, your child's going to grow and get bigger and older and taller and stronger. They're going to outrun you. So there are all these things designed to help you, but that costs money. Well, who was going to pay for that? You? Because once you buy the device, you have to pay for the monthly subscription. No, there are people out there who will pay for this. It takes a little bit of work. And not only that, it takes you knowing that and asking for that. Right? Unfortunately, the way that the world works is people are always trying to make money from you. And so you gotta find not the loophole, but find what is, you know, like available for you to take advantage of these products. So yeah, that is a great message because like you said, you know, sometimes you don't know what's available until you do. But you said that there were a lot of services or things denied to your sister and to your parents as she was growing up?
No, my parents denied them.
Okay. Like yeah, as because often, but we were like, oh, we don't need it or we don't want it.
Yeah. And I feel like we were all just me. And my siblings were all so young at that time, and you know, this is the first one in the family that is diagnosed with something, and we don't know like how to also advocate and help her. So I feel like when they were offered those services, and you know, parents, they work every single day. It's like they don't have the time for it. So then not knowing that back then, like, and I tell my mom to this day, like, now I'm in this field, I'm just like, mom, you know, like, she should have had gotten this done. Like, she could have been talking by now. So, like, my sister, she's, like, nonverbal. Mm-hmm. She's in good therapy now, but I'm just like, mom, she could have been in this and that, and, like, she could have gotten help, like, she could have been more independent, blah, 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 you know, and all that stuff. And I would have to advocate for my sister not all the time, but I try to. And I would have to remind my other little sisters and my parents that, you know, you guys have to be patient with her.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, like, she's gonna, and she's a teenager. So, so it's like teenager plus that, it's just gonna like frustrate her even more and like, you guys are just going to have to be patient with her because, you know, even though they're nonverbal, they still have feelings. They're still a human at the end of the day, you know? So I always have to remind my family that, like, you guys just need to be patient and, like, try to understand and see what she really wants because you guys are hurting her feelings too, you know? Like, you guys wouldn't like that if somebody did that to you, you know? Really? So I would just have to remind my family all the time. I'm just like, you guys got to be patient with her. Mm-hmm.
So that is a great segue to my last question for you, Linda. How do you think we can continue to raise awareness and promote acceptance of an autism diagnosis in the Hmong community?
I still feel like I said earlier, it's still a field where like everybody is still kind of like iffy on. So like I feel like just talking more about it or sharing like what we're doing now, just talking about it, normalizing it, sharing it, and like not being, you know, like obviously when you're a parent and you have a kid like that, it's like you kind of some more because you're like, they're going to behave this way. They're going to behave that way when you go out in public. Mm-hmm. So it's like just normalizing it and like letting people know that like, you know, my child's like this, like blah, 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 and all that stuff, you know. Or, like, I mean, obviously parents are not obligated to tell them, but, like, if you are trying to, like, normalize it and spread awareness for yourself and advocate for your own child, then, like, it's, like, do it. Because you'd rather have people understand than just assume that, like, oh, Nitsapo or Nishimonglu, you know? So it's, like, and don't feel like you're alone because you're not. Because there's other families that's out there, too, that are dealing with it or, like, it may be worse for them, you know, or they don't have the resources, they don't know the resources. So just normalizing it and talking more about it and like reaching out to people, like how you have that page. And I so appreciate you having that page because then I'm just like, whoa, like there's so many people. Like I don't even have a child with like, you know, that's on the spectrum or like with the development delay, but then working in the field, it's like you feel them, like, you know who they can reach out to, especially like when they're in like your state or they're in your region, you're like, hey, you know, like I work for this company, like reach out to them. Maybe you can get help through them, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, for sure. And I think too, part of my role as a BCA is doing that parent training, right? So then I have my role to teach my RBTs, coach them, supervise them, and then also do the same with the parents. So if they mastered a goal, I'm going to teach the parents, and then it's the parents' job to then do that at home. And also, like you said, kind of as they go out into their community and into their, you know, with their families, like getting other people on board, right? So let's say the kid's having issues with communicating that he just wants attention, but I teach the parent can then coach, you know, like their friends, and everyone's on board, right? So having conversations like, hey, so we're working on this in therapy and we're working on it, we'd love for you to help us, you know, and then it becomes kind of, you're normalizing that, right? We're all here to help us succeed. And then, you know, not only that, but for our Hmong parents too, knowing that there are others out there to support them, I think that's really great. And kind of to piggyback on what you said too, the field of ABA and then the diagnosis of autism, in the Hmong community, it's all over. It's still in its infancy, really, if we think about it in terms, in regards to other diagnoses, like it's still very early. We're still, a lot of research is still being done, and that's great, but it's still not well understood in even our like Caucasian counterparts, right? Because we talk about, I see within Hmong community, a lot of families who are like, oh, we just don't go, right? We hear this in our groups, like, we just don't go because it's too hard. So we just stay home. Yeah. And then, and I want you guys to understand that that's not just a Hmong thing, it's all parents of kiddos with autism thing, right?
Exactly.
Whose parents are like, we go to the store, he throws a fit, we leave. I'm like, well, what are you gonna do? Never go to the store? No, let me help you. Let's talk about different strategies. Let me put this on a little visual schedule for you, right? Let's do something. Let's work through this. So understanding that, you know, it's not just a Hmong thing, it's not just a whatever thing, it's a parenting thing, all of us, you know, and that you're not alone. And so thank you so much for just having this conversation with me and keep being an amazing RBT. I'm so excited to see where you go from here.
Thank you. Oh,
wait, tell me again, are you planning to pursue something? No, you're pursuing something now. And you were telling me, and then I was like, oh, guess what? We're not recording. So.
So I am actually in a teaching certification program now to be licensed in teaching, but I really don't want to teach because I was still trying to figure out like what I wanted to be. So like being in the field, like I feel like that's what I want to do now. So I've been leaning towards becoming a BCBA myself. I'm just waiting until I'm done with this program because I'm not about to back out on this program. So I'm almost done. I'm graduating next year. I'll be done with this program next year. So I think once I'm done with that, I will start looking to becoming a BCBA. And I like living here in North Carolina, I feel like there's not a lot of us in the ABA, honestly, here. I think there's only one in my company, another BT that I met her through our team's chat and I was like, oh, her name is Mai. She is definitely Hmong. So like I personally messaged her after my pod meeting. I was like, oh my gosh, you're Hmong. Like you're the first Hmong BT, like other BT in the area in our company, because it's just been me. And then my BCBA for the Hickory region, she's all like, oh my gosh, Linda, like I wish you were in my region because I just got a Hmong family. And I'm just like, put me on that case. Like, I want to be there. I would drive that 45 minutes to wherever they're at, okay? Like, put me on that case.
Every time I see another Hmong, a professional, a Hmong RBT or BCBA or BCABA, whatever, I'm always like, oh, you're Hmong. And I actually met one here too recently. And it's so funny, right? When you meet someone, you're like, I'm Hmong too. What are you doing here? You know? And she is also an RBT, about to become an RBCBA soon. So I was like, girl, come find me. I was like, come find me on social media. I was like, come join my group. You know, we need find everybody and get us all together so we can kind of get there and just you know, make sure that if anybody has questions, we can answer them, because it still breaks my heart when your family say things like, we didn't know, or we had no idea that this, we had no idea that you were talking, you know, and we didn't know there was help. And I'm like, no, there is help, you know, and again, just put that information out there.
But honestly, I wish more Hmong family knew about ABA because it is very beneficial. And like, I keep saying that, like, we are, like, I think you made a post about this in the Otau page where, it must have been a parent. They're like, well, is ABA worth it or whatever? And then they were talking about, like, is it worth it? Is it worth it to take them out of school and all that stuff? And I think I commented, like, you know, ABA is one of the longer therapies that you would have because speech therapy, OT, you know, they're a little shorter than ABA, but ABA is one of the longer therapies. So, like, it is really long, but it's very beneficial, you know?
You know, I wanted to dive into ABA eventually. You know, I want to start kind of tread a little lightly here and make sure that we introduce all the different components before we jump into ABA. But it definitely is an investment in your time, right? Like, and, you know, it's not one of those therapies where you're like, okay, I take my kid there and great. No, you as a parent, you need to be as involved, if not more, right? Thank you so much, Linda. It was great chatting with you.